Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire is produced by CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, broadcasting from the traditional unceded territory of the Haudenosaunee or Mohawk Nation. I'm your host, Laith Maarouf.
And I'm your co-host, Gretchen King.
In this episode...
The number of overdose deaths we've been seeing in Toronto are just unacceptable.
The issues related to the fish farms have been ongoing for a long, long time now.
But first, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from Omi Salmi Rahmatullah from the Groundwire National Coordination Team.
In early August, organizers with the Parkdale winter strike in Toronto announced that the three-month-long strike had ended in victory. For the past 6 months, Parkdale residents organized to take on their landlord and oppose a proposed rent increase and maintenance negligence. Tenants organized within their buildings and linked to other communities within the Parkdale neighborhood. Commencing on May 1st, 300 tenants across 12 buildings went on a rent strike, and hundreds more joined various actions planned across Parkdale and the city. The rental strike succeeded in building a strong movement within Parkdale and amongst working-class people living there. Tenants in the accused slum landlord corporation Metcap reached an agreement in early August that saw significant concessions from Metcap. Tenants won a substantial reduction in the above-guideline rent increases in each building, a program of additional rent relief for tenants in financial hardship, and a program of maintenance and repair for each building. While the Parkdale tenants who organized won this fight, they said in a statement that, quote, "We will continue to organize in our buildings. We will reach out to our neighbors facing rent increases in other buildings throughout the neighborhood. We are prepared to take up the struggles of all working class people in our neighborhood, whether around housing, education, employment, or any other area of our lives," unquote.
Thanks to Omi for the headline. Groundwire's next headline is from Greg McDougall with the Media Co-op.
Traditional Mi'kmaq 1st and 7th District Chiefs oppose Junex projects in Gaspésie, Quebec. Suzanne Patlis and Gary Metallic released a statement this week to assert their support for the occupation that has gone on since August 7th against Junex. They affirmed the Mi'kmaq people's inherent right and title over unceded and unsurrendered traditional territory. The Mi'kmaq chiefs are demanding an immediate moratorium on all exploration and development of oil or gas on traditional Mi'kma'ki territory. Both Metallic and Patlis made the following comments in a video clip released by Collective Anarchives.
We're here to support what's happening here, the protest, the camp, and the blockade that happened last week. Basically, to show the province of Quebec and Junex, people that are here aren't trespassing. They have our permission as the still original title holders of our district territory. And as I said, Suzanne is here to support our district, because when we have problems like this in regards to oil and gas, we support our districts, we support each other.
My name is Suzanne Patlis. I'm from Unumagi, and we have already successfully defeated a fracking company called Petroworth Resources in our territory, where we asserted our title over our inherent territory because it is unceded, unsurrendered territory, and it is stolen by the province and by the federal government. And we were able to successfully chase them out, and we also supported our brothers and sisters in El Sibuktuk during the SWN protests and blockades that happened during 2013, and we were able to successfully get rid of SWN Resources, which are a multi-billion dollar oil and gas company. And now we are here uniting once again to support no fracking in 7th District. So we are hopeful that our assertion over our inherent territories through our inherent title, which means all of the resources and land beneath our feet, inherently belong to the Indigenous people of Mi'kma'ki. So we are here to align from one district to another to support our brothers and sisters, to say water is sacred, life is sacred, and we will do what it takes, both legally and on the land, in order to successfully get this company out and protect our inherent territories.
That's it for the headlines. Groundwire will be right back after this. Protector. Welcome back to Groundwire. Now it's time for our future stories.
In response to a dramatic increase in overdose deaths in Toronto, activists from the Toronto Harm Reduction Alliance set up an unsanctioned overdose prevention site in Toronto's Moss Park on August 12th. Police have allowed the site to remain open, and Toronto Public Health opened an interim supervised injection service on August 21st as the city waits for three permanent supervised injection sites to open this fall. According to volunteers, 12 to 25 people have used the overdose prevention site each day, and five overdoses were reversed with naloxone or rescue breathing by volunteers. Mick Sweetman from CJRU, 1280 AM in Toronto, visited the overdose prevention site on the opening day and files this report for Groundwire.
So I'm Matt Johnson, and I'm one of the steering committee members for THRA, the Toronto Harm Reduction Alliance.
And we're here in Moss Park today. You have a tent set up as a pop-up safe injection site.
Overdose prevention site.
Okay, can you explain the difference between the two?
So a supervised injection site or service is a bricks and mortar fixed site with medical staff under a medical directive with a exemption from the federal government that they're a legally sanctioned injection site. We are an overdose prevention site, so although we have medical personnel on site, we don't have an exemption. With an overdose prevention site also does outreach and hands out naloxone kits and does a lot of other things. So yes, we have space for people to use safely in on site where there are trained people to respond in case of an overdose, but we are unsanctioned, and we're also trying to take some measures so that when people walk away from the site, they're safer than when they came.
Can you just tell our listeners how you came to set up the tent today? Like, first of all, like why you felt that was necessary, and how it's been received either by drug users or by the authorities?
Yeah. So the reason that we set it up is that the number of overdose deaths we've been seeing in Toronto are just unacceptable, and the lack of response from the province in terms of funding and moving on safe injection sites is unacceptable. We need a place for people to use safely, and we needed it to have been already opened. We've been talking about this for a while. We've been talking about the issue for a while, and a group of us just said we can't morally and ethically sit back and wait anymore and feel okay with ourselves. We need to do this regardless of whether we're sanctioned to do it or not. So we came and started setting up our tent. We were hoping to get the tent set up before the police came. The police came pretty quick. They had to call in to the higher-ups. And a superintendent came and basically said he's not necessarily opposed to what we're doing, but he has concerns about safety. He has concerns about, you know, somebody potentially dying on our site. And so he said, you know, convince me that this is safe. Convince me that you know what to do. We gave him our spiel, and at the end he said he was convinced, and he had to talk to his higher-ups. He had a conversation with them where he said that he advocated for us to be allowed to remain open. They put it in his hands to make a decision, and he decided to use his discretion to allow us to stay open.
And how long do you intend to stay open?
We would like to stay open indefinitely. I mean, we're going to take it sort of a day at a time. So far, you know, the police have given us leeway to operate for a day. We would like to be here tomorrow. We'd like to be here in a week. And to be honest, we'd like to be here even after the safe injection sites open, because they're not equipped to deal with the number of overdoses we are currently seeing in Toronto. They were built looking at the old numbers, so they can deal with a fair number of the overdoses in the areas that they're in, but not citywide. And they were never meant to deal with all overdoses citywide. That's far too ambitious for just three sites. People don't travel to go to these things. They use in their neighborhoods. So those sites are fantastic. But for the hot spots in between, we're going to need smaller things like this.
And was that one of the reasons you chose Moss Park?
Yes, it's an underserved area. There's been a number of overdose deaths here and around this area in the last little while.
What else do you really want people to know about what you're doing here today?
I think just that this wasn't our first step. We're not trying to do this as like a publicity stunt. This has been months in the making that we've been, you know, talking about, should we just go ahead and do this? I mean, this is quite intense for us. I mean, we're worried about being arrested. We don't want to endanger drug users that might be wanting to use the site if police are going to come. But we just felt like we really had no other option. We can't sit by and watch people continue dying at all, but especially not in such high numbers anymore. I mean, we're just steeped in trauma and grief from how many people we're losing. We're losing our loved ones and our colleagues and our coworkers and our friends and our clients. And it's just too much. We cannot cope anymore with how much death and loss and grief there is, and so we need to start just moving on these things, and so that's why we just have gone ahead and just opened it.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
For CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, I am Mick Sweetman.
Thanks to CJRU for that feature story. Our next contribution comes from Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
The Wild Salmon Defenders Alliance, or WSDA, is dedicated to the protection of wild salmon. Today, wild salmon stocks are dismal, and according to WSDA President Eddie Gardner, fish farms operating in coastal waters are part of the problem. Gennardi O'Sullivan from Co-op Radio in Vancouver spoke with Eddie about the WSDA's efforts to shut down coastal fishing farms in BC.
To date, it has all fallen on deaf ears, and both the federal and the provincial governments have continued to brush aside, ignore the people, and especially the Musqueam Tsawwadino, which is a nation that is totally unified. They want to protect their territory of fish farms, and over the years, over some 31 years, they've always voiced their opposition and have more vigorously pushed for the eviction of fish farms from their territory. And in their territory, there's about one third of the fish farms in the Pacific Coast. In their territory, so they're very concerned about the damages that are being done by those fish farms to the herring, to their clam beds, to the hooligans, to the capelin, and to their wild salmon. And so Operation Virus Hunter 2 is taking place as we speak up along the coast. And they're now in the Muskomog Zawadinuk territory. And their findings only reconfirms the clear, hard evidence that there are violations to the Fisheries Act with respect to illegal bycatch. We know that the Muskomog Zawadinuk do have their aboriginal rights entitled to their territory and to their resources. And those fish farms that have been established in their territory have been placed there without their consent. And so it is a violation of their indigenous rights and title, and that must end. So Justice Cohen, in his report, he said if it is proven that fish farms do any more than minimal harm, you know, to wild salmon, then they should be shut down. There is evidence. There is evidence that there's way more than minimal harm being done. And that is related to diseases, viruses, pathogens that stem from fish farms. They're a breeding ground for diseases, and they can be passed on to wild salmon. And around the world, sea lice is also a problem. And sea lice are vectors of diseases. And when they grow in great numbers, because when you have a concentration of farmed salmon in those nets, they become a breeding ground for these parasites.
We're speaking with Eddie Gardner, who is an elder from the Squaw Nation, and he is Stalo. We're talking wild salmon versus fish farms and the Wild Salmon Alliance. The other day, I found a video with Alexander Morton. I'd like to invite you to stay on the line, Eddie, if you don't mind, so we can have a little discussion about the news on fish farms from Alex Morton's perspective.
And we've looked in every salmon farm from Campbell River through Musqueam Zawadinuk territory, called the Broughton Archipelago by some. And, you know, as a biologist, the reason wild salmon and herring are not surviving around these feedlots is painfully evident. Early on in the trip, farm salmon came by the camera and took a big poop. And from that point forward, I know what farm salmon waste looks like. It's this olive brown stringy material. And once you know what it looks like, you can see that these farm salmon are marinating in it. I mean, in the farms, it's a soup of fish farm waste. But more importantly, what we see is the wild fish in the pens and around the pens who are exposed to this waste, who appear to be even eating this waste.
Well, recently... Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, that's okay. We know that the issues related to the fish farms have been ongoing for a long, long time now, and something really, really needs to be done before it's too late, and that's why we're putting a call out to everyone to unite our voices in a very strong collective force so that we can achieve what really needs to be done, and that is to help clear a safe passage for our wild salmon. And in doing so, we know that we have confidence in the wild salmon. It's a magical and magnificent creature that given a chance, it can return to higher numbers instead of the dismal numbers that we're experiencing right now.
For more on the Wild Salmon Defenders Alliance campaign, visit www.wsda.ca.
More than 150 centuries, not just 150 years. Now's the time to open your eyes and open up your ears. More than 150 centuries, living in harmony with the land. After 500 years of conquest, the people are taking a stand. When the Europeans landed, just what did they bring? Securing their superiority, the conquerors took everything. The land, the buffalo, all the fishes in the sea, the potlatch and the sun dance, the freedom just to be. Took the children from their homes to the residential school, forbidden to speak their languages, the punishments were cruel. And now we're at the brink, and yes, we're still alive, but if we don't change really soon, maybe no one will survive. Another 150 centuries, not just 150 years. Now's the time to open your eyes and open up your ears. More than 150 centuries in harmony with the land. After 500 years of conquest, the people are taking a stand. The missing and murdered women, their stories must be told. Truth and reconciliation is worth more than all the gold. The statues of our oppressors are gonna be torn down. And we never did see the land, the country, or to crown. Technology betrayed us in the days of horse and gun. And now big oil bullies all of us with everything they've done. No longer sitting idle, we are standing up to fight, to help all of Canada to do what we know is right. More than 150 centuries, not just 150 years. Now's the time to open your eyes and open up your ears. More than 150 centuries in harmony with the land. After 500 years of conquest, the people are taking a stand.
You just heard More Than 150 Centuries, a new single released by Kathy Cook. Welcome back to Groundwire, your source for news from the ground up, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca and airing on your community radio station. Now it's time for our community radio report.
Every summer, CKUT opens its doors to young producers and hosts for the Youth Radio Camp. Participants learn the ropes of interviewing and all aspects of hosting a radio program to bring their voices and ideas to the airwaves. In this excerpt from the last program produced by a group of 14-year-old radio hosts, they offer their own take on popular music and issues it brings up for many of them.
And before we get back to talking, we are just going to give you a quick word from our sponsors.
Congratulations! You are eligible for a free 30-day trial. This free 30-day trial comes with everything you need, including a free arrest, free charges, free arraignment, and free conviction guaranteed. Shipping and handling not included. Defense lawyer also not included. We have you surrounded. The more you struggle, the worse it will be for you. Put that down. Put it down. Put that down. This message brought to you whether you like it or not.
Before we continue, we'd just like to say that we have on as special guests our counselors this past week, Kay and Scully.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
How are you guys doing?
Good, and you?
We're doing
good.
Well.
I'm having fun.
Yeah.
So
what did you guys think about the song?
I thought it was, well, there was one line in there that I thought was interesting. I don't know what exactly she said, but it was something along the lines of like, not following her daddy's rules or something like that.
Yeah, she says, I am not going to be what my daddy wants me to be.
Yeah, like, I love that. I feel like this is such, like, a teen, like, breakout song. Just, like, I don't care. I love that. I think it's, like, really rebellious and fun.
It really is, because the first lyric is actually, there's a party and we're all going and we're all growing up.
So. Yeah, I love that. I think it's, like, such a teen anthem, like, something I would have listened to when I was younger. I would still listen to, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, I like the song too. I also agree with you that I love that line about the I'm not going to be what my daddy wants me to be. It's a pretty cool line.
Mm-hmm, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, that stuck out to me too.
Being a teenager myself, I somewhat sympathize. Although, to be honest, my parents are great and I don't feel that much of a need to rebel.
Shout out to Edgar's parents.
Yeah. Shout out to my dad.
Shout out to my mom and dad, definitely also
listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we are going to go to Joey Sherritt, Montreal rapper, formerly in the Posters. Joe, do we have you on air?
Yeah, man.
Okay, you can hear us. I'm just going to ask you a couple questions about your, your single music.
Yeah.
Your mom, she wasn't around when you were growing up, but in Vibes, you say that you just want to see, I just want to see you throw all the pain to the side. So I'm just wondering, like, was that pain from your childhood not relevant in the making of this album and this EP?
Yeah, you know what? That line was more, it wasn't necessarily a personal line. It was more of a line kind of just like towards the listener. Like I want the listener to kind of like be free within themselves. Because the whole song, the whole Vibe song is basically me saying, it's like an idea of chasing good energy and kind of recognizing and avoiding bad energy.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It's like, throw the pain off to the side. I can't remember what the next line is, but I want the listener to just like throw, like get all the weight off their shoulders so that they can be free and chase the good vibes as well. That's for sure.
No, I totally understand you. Well, right now, I guess we're going to go to your new single, Vibes, and that is off the EP that is also self-titled Vibes, correct? Next up, this is Vibes from Joey Sherritt, from our very own Montreal. Have a good listen.
For more information about the Youth Radio Camp at CKUT, visit www.ckut.ca.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUT Radio on unceded Mohawk territory in Montreal. I have been your host, Leif Marouf. Music this week was by Oz12 and Kathy Cook. Headlines this episode were written by Omi Salmeh Rahmatullah and Gretchen King. We thank all our contributors. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.